Hi, I'm Josh, and within you are two werewolves. One of them kind of looks like a dude, but with a little extra hair and really gnarly skin condition. And one of them kind of looks like you shaved Chewbacca's face. Yeah. Which one of these wolves will win? The one you feed.
Yeah, well, it's all true.
Wow. Hi, I'm Matt. And I finally, it took me like six tries, but I finally managed to go see Wolf Spaceman yesterday. And there were a few things in there that surprised me. But most of all, I just thought it was nice to see those trolls from Willow getting work again.
Yeah, fair enough. Let's see. So this is Charlie down in Austin. I really enjoy watching these kind of broad things like Cooties and Werewolves Within, where you get this cast of people who are just... like everybody is just super rangy. Like it's the you know, Sam Richardson in Werewolves Within, he also plays the African kind of business mogul guy in Ted Lasso, and it's sort of like, and he, you would absolutely believe that he was from whatever country, 100%. His accent and the whole, and the way he carries himself, everything. You watch him in this one, he's just like this like kind of puddly doughboy kind of character, and like Michael Walken's is the same thing. So like I like weirdly broad horror comedies with very rangy actors.
Yes, and we are all Pud Little Doughboys here on Harsha Hot Dog.
Yes, sir.
First up, we have a short called My Cat Lucy, or Mi Gato Lucia.
Gato.
It is an animated short. It is 2 minutes long. It features a gato. And it is goddamn adorable and just about perfect.
Yeah, I thought this is cute as shit. I liked it.
Yeah, I love the idea of taking just the basic concept of like a possession thing, and then just making it animated and then a kitty. It's like, because yeah, it's basically, it's just an exorcism. That's basically what it boils down to. And it's like, and but it's just adorable, and just the fact that he can undo him with a little batwangy thing on the back of a door. It's like, that's fantastic.
Man's exorcism is another man's hairball. So,
and am I crazy in thinking that I thought we either had done this or we had maybe looked at it for one of the festivals or something?
We might have. I went back and forth on that.
It was super familiar to me. Like, that was, like, this was very familiar.
Yeah, this is one where I went to, like, the website to go, did we do this? Because it seems like it. But I didn't see any record of it. Then again, I don't necessarily have the list of every single thing we did at the horror festival. So had it been in one of those, I might not have made note and might be a repeat. In which case, most folks didn't know about it based on not having been able to go. So... surprise.
We're not displaying our laurel, though. So,
oh, well, then that just means that they don't like us.
Whoever would.
Who would dare?
My favorite thing of this, the only thing I want to make sure to say about this, that my favorite thing about this was when he just does the thing and then he calls out the thing and then it rises up in big claws, whatever else, and the kid just goes, I knew it! That was great. That's just a great little throwaway, super fast thing. And I was just like, that just tickled me so much. I thought it was so funny. It was great. Sort of like, because even in a perilous situation, like that inclination, like, you know, it's that thing of just, you know, it's like in Scream, like, you know, the rules for surviving a horror movie or whatever else. It's sort of like, it's like, you know, when everybody's in dire peril or whatever else, you know, in the back of his head, he's still thinking about that. Like, it's still in there. You can't get rid of it. And it's just sort of like, and so I love that in this one. It's like, I knew it. Oh, God, it made me laugh. It was funny.
Animation in this is, and the animation in it is just really cool.
It looks
good.
They
have a lot more stretching and squashing than you usually see in 3D animation. Like, the cat is 2D-ish. And the kid is 3D, and it kind of all meshes together in a really fun way. And just creative, like the cat sticking the pitchfork tongue out and having the hellfire in its mouth for a minute. It's like, there's a lot of care that went into this thing.
So. It gave me a little bit of Samurai Jack vibes. It's got a little bit of the Genndy Tartakovsky about it, which is always a good thing. So,
I thought I was watching Hotel Transylvania 2 this morning, and the same thing, like the animation in those are great. It's all stretchy, squashy. Yeah. All of which to say, you should watch it. It's good.
It's lovely. It's a lovely thing. Yeah. It's great. Mm-hmm.
Well, let's see. For starters, do we want to start with Wolf Spaceman?
Wolf Spaceman. Yeah.
Lobo, hombre. Hombre, lobo. Los lobos. Para bailar la bamba. Anyway. This is the second kind of Universal Monster movies that Leigh Whannell has done. The first one was The Invisible Man, which he turned into kind of a tech-based metaphor for abusive dudes. This one is more family trauma kind of thing as the metaphor in here. It is interesting how this kind of plays with the Universal Wolfman. I'm glad that we saw the Del Toro one to kind of remember how that plot's laid out. Mm-hmm. Because you have like the son who was sent away and comes back, and in the original Wolfman, it's the kid who's going on the rampages, and in this one, it's his father. And you're like, there is cool stuff kind of marinating here, but overall, like, I just think this works really, really well. It doesn't seem like the critical consensus, but this kicked me straight up the ass several times in the theater. And that's like with the hurdles of like how kind of horror numb I've become. Like, I don't really care for the Julia Garner as an actor, really. And
oh, see, I love her.
So like, this was going uphill for me, and it's still just fucking steamrolled me several times. Yeah, I don't know. Julia Garner, like, after this in Apartment 7A, I'm just like, she always looks like she's about to cry.
Yeah.
And so they, like, that seems to be the only character she can play, too, is the person who's just about to cry.
I mean, in Ozark, she's the person that's just about to stab you at all times, which is very different.
Yeah, I was going to say, if you get a chance to, I mean, I know with all the free time, whatever, but if you get a chance to, go watch Royal Hotel. I think it's on Hulu. It came out a couple years or last year, a couple years ago, whatever else. That movie rules. Like, if you're, it's good Aussie kind of exploitation-y thriller thing, and she's great in that. She's really, really good in that one. That movie rules. That movie should have gotten a lot more attention than it got, basically none. But that movie is awesome.
Yeah, but if that is a hurdle, that's a significant hurdle as one of basically three people we spend any significant amount of time with in this film. So. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and she gets there, you know, like when, after the sogginess, then there is just some genuine emotion, I feel like, happening in this. And I feel like he did some things that we haven't seen before with this. Having the transformation be slow.
Yeah.
So that we
Yeah, much more zombie it. Transformation.
Like, I kept thinking about The Fly, too.
Yeah.
Where it's this process that's slow but inexorable, and he's
the tooth falls out. Yeah.
So we have all this time to watch him deteriorate. And then the other thing that I love is we get shots from the werewolf perspective and shots from the people perspective, but they don't do it by putting the camera where their eyes would be.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, we're not looking out of their eyes. So we just see like werewolf sitting in a room that seems fairly well lit, and he's hearing a voice in the room but it just sounds like Charlie Brown's parents. And then we spin the camera around and we look at the wife, and suddenly the room is pitch black and he is saying things that she can't understand. And it doesn't bother with that like POV shot. It's just shows us what it's like inside his head, and like the creeping horror of the idea that like my wife would be standing there talking to me and just the words would stop making sense.
That was really a heart-wrenching thing, because like you see how dedicated of a parent he is, and like, you know, really where his sort of like center lies. And you know, different people have different aspirations in life, whatever, like, so that's all fine, but he really, you can see how much this matter, these things matter to him, and had to have that just be stolen away, and you're just like, god damn, man.
I do think the the way they pull that off, like by technical means with lighting and sound, like being when you see from the werewolf's perspective and everybody's eyes are doing that reflective thing like deer in a headlight. Mm-hmm. And you can even see like there's like the capillaries in their cheeks are showing up to the werewolf because like mm-hmm. wherever there's blood flow close to the surface, like I think that stuff's fucking fascinating and cool. And like the dark room and the unintelligible speech. And as much as soon as I started doing that, I absolutely loved it. Some part of my brain went, I bet there's a percentage of people that watch this that see that and go, ugh, it's too gimmicky. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And I pity those people for not being able to enjoy that and have that fun part. Cause like, I think that was very, very clever. Cause I don't think it was even till the second or maybe even the third time that I realized we were getting some shots that had more meaning than I was initially giving to them. Because they almost just let you see these characters being at odds and a little like, just like a half step off from each other.
Yeah.
And you're like, yeah, that makes sense. They're in this weird situation. But then when you see the one that really shows the perspective go like do the 180 camera turn from one to the other, and you kind of go, oh, well then that scene a minute ago where he's in the hall and he's kind of muttering to himself and pushing the thing up against the door, and he turns around and his daughter comes into the hall and is kind of staring at him, and his wife comes into the hall and is kind of staring at him. I'm like, oh, because he's muttering to himself and banging the thing. And now you go, oh, wait, no, he was probably saying shit that made no goddamn sense. Mm-hmm. And doing that, and you go, fuck, they've been doing it already, and I didn't even notice it until now. So you're retroactively like, this is way smarter than I realized. And that's a good clever move, man, to let your audience realize they've been had, but having something strong enough to have the payoff make them like it going forward, because they do it like three times probably in the grander mm-hmm. style. And I still loved it just every time. I thought that was fascinating. I could see how that might be a bit of a deal breaker for some folks, but for me that totally worked.
I feel like usually you would see the like predator vision.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
Thing. And any time that you're in a POV from an animal, it tends, or you know, a monster or whatever, it tends to be straight in their head looking out.
And it's a little blurry around the edges, maybe. Yeah.
Yeah, but they have the entire movie be change out around them, like. As we said, that was very cool.
It was really neat.
It like it took me a little bit with this because in the beginning, like husband and wife are so unpleasant to each other. You know, their marriage is on the rocks because of course it is. And like the father-daughter cuteness interplay was not quite clicking for me. But as soon as we get out of the city and in the car, and even just like the goofy car trip stuff that you do with a kid, that seemed more natural. And then by the time they were doing the actual, you know, werewolfing.
I think it was
working. Yeah.
The part where they're driving up, I think they're allowing those characters to just exist in that moment. Whereas up until then, they're trying to do some narrative heavy lifting. Because one of the faults I had with this movie is there's a couple times where, and this just to me feels like studio notes, especially when you hear about things where like Netflix having that executive order apparently that was like, people, we know everybody's doing something on their phone while they're watching this. If you could have the characters describe what they're doing so people that aren't really watching will still be able to keep up.
To recap, I need to go to Brazil to get my
yeah, basically trying to repeal like age-old entertainment edict of show don't tell. And so like that's why this feels like a studio note to me. But you have the scene in the city with dad and daughter. Daughter hops up on the little embankment barricade between the road and the sidewalk, and she's walking along and he's telling her to get down and he's trying to be nice about it, but you can see he's getting agitated. And she hops down and some guy kind of spooks her, and dad reacts in an understandable and overreacting way of just being like, I was so worried about you that this is coming off as some anger. It's not meant at you. It's meant at the situation. And he immediately dials it back and says he's sorry. That's not what he wants to do. And it's like, okay, off he goes. But we've already seen the, you know, 30 years prior with his ultra militant dad and all that shit. And it's like, mm-hmm. cool. This has told the story of this guy trying to break that cycle, blah, blah, blah. But then they give us the scene later in the film where he's like, you know, parents are supposed to keep their kid from getting those scars, but sometimes we hold on to them so hard that we end up doing the scarring ourselves. I'm like, fuck you, movie. You had a whole flashback with the dad and the scene with the daughter to teach us that about these characters. We knew it. And then you felt you had to say it out loud. And that's just so weak, and it doesn't trust the audience to be able to follow very simple and well laid out breadcrumbs, that it just disappointed me. And like, it doesn't seem like in keeping with the kind of writing that was doing that work. And it just made me feel like someone in the test screening was like, I don't get it. What is that supposed to mean? Why would we know that about him? They don't say it. And like, ugh.
I kind of thought that too, when it came to like that thing of being like, when he's starting to lose the grip on things, and you're like, it's like, it works really well as an unspoken sort of cipher for like addiction, where you're like, you can have somebody who's a genuinely good person, who's a caring father or loving partner or whatever. And then, but if they're an addict, like, you know, they can try as hard as possible to be that the person that they really are, but it's just sort of like, well, you just kind of can't. And it's sort of like, no matter how hard you try, and it's like, and I like the fact that it was kind of unspoken, but I didn't really think about that, Matt, like how, like, yeah, ultimately, like, you know, there's, I don't think the whole breaking the cycle thing is that complicated of a concept or whatever, but I didn't really think about it in terms of like then restating it and being like, well, it's because, you know, some bozo just doesn't know his ass from his ear, can't figure it out on his own, the kind of a thing. Mm-hmm. Like, ah, okay, cool.
And it could be me overreacting. I don't know. It just seemed like I was just really mad because I was, you're saying the subtext as text. That's the point of subtext.
It's one of those things too, that if somebody said that to you in real life, you would go, that is the tritest bullshit I've ever heard. Because everyone thinks that inside their head. Like, that is not a new and unique thought to you. And it, you said it in this very movie poster kind of way. Yeah, yeah, like it felt like marketing. And don't talk like that anymore, Steve. hopefully Steve wouldn't. And, you know, it's one of those, like, Jennifer Connelly in A Beautiful Mind, I have to believe that something extraordinary is possible.
Yeah, the Akiva Goldsmanning of a thing. Sort of like a...
Yeah, oh, he writes exclusively in the taglines for movies. But yeah, that is a thing that in the moment made me roll my eyes a little too.
Yeah, and it's a minor just quibble.
The rest of his, like, the breakdown of his body and his mind is way more of a focus here than I thought it was gonna be.
It's much more of a tragedy. Yeah.
Yeah, like the trailer looked like it was showing us things and it really wasn't, because we were missing all of the context.
Yeah.
So it ends up being as much about him being trapped inside this body horror thing as it does the people who are trying to stay safe from him and from his dad, right? Like,
yeah.
And plus, the gore that actually made me go, which hardly ever happens.
Like, yeah.
We get the chewing on the arm and then just starts to nibble at the leg. And I'm like, I think I can see where this is going. They're like, oh, we'll show you where the fuck it's going. It just kind of lets you marinate in it a little while. So I feel like the fly comparison is more apt.
Yeah, I think you're right. I didn't make that connection, but I think it is very apt.
Well, and then, you know, the thing, kind of having a chance to kind of think about this a bit, and then, you know, and kind of get a little bit of distance away or whatever. It's like, I remember texting you guys being like, it kind of feels like it's like a small, the scale is too small, kind of bummer, sad bummer. And I still stand by that, but I also think that, like, there's a lot of good that's in here for sure, but I still do stand by the idea that I think some of this works more if there's more people. Like, not like a whole group of friends, not like extended family, I don't mean like that, but just more, like, additional houses, more people, like, just, I think, because just the slide of the losing of the guy and all the stuff and how the things go works well in a capsule, but it's just like, it just begs to be, like, on a slightly bigger stage, I think. The more I've thought about this, like, because the family stuff does work really well, and the slow kind of transformation stuff, all that stuff works really, really well. I just think it needs to be nestled in a bigger, the scale needs to be bigger. Because, I mean, after the goddamn car wreck thing, you're like, Jesus, Herbert Walker Christ, like, that was the puckering of a sequence, you know, and then it was like, and then that's all you'll get. For larger scale anything, and okay, fine. I mean, that's the thing they want to make, but I kept thinking, the more I think about it, you know, since seeing it, I was just like, I just wish it was just a little bit bigger.
And see, I think everything you're saying makes perfect sense, but I actually prefer the exact opposite, I think, and kind of like what we got, because one of the things that I kind of pieced together, I think, on the ride home was the further away I got from the like really creative way of using, you know, lighting and camera work to show the difference in how they communicate and some of the crazy gore. If you kind of soften those things, this is a very traditional Universal horror film that's much more about kind of dread and people talking and being concerned and being powerless. And especially if we want to, you know, make this about this person from a dysfunctional childhood trying to create a functional family and feeling that spiraling out of his control, as well as his own body and mind kind of spiraling out of his control. And especially if you want to layer that addiction metaphor on top of it, those are all very personal, very private struggles that people try to hide from the outside world. I mean, well, look at me, fuck, man. I mean, I was a raging alcoholic for many years of this podcast, to the point of being useless sometimes. And that's a thing that I would think I was hiding from people, but you guys knew, Car and Mo knew, you know, work eventually knew. But it's the thing you try to keep is bottled up, and you watch this crazy shit happening, and you look at the couple of people they interact with on their way to their mountain town, and they know there's this thing that's over there that we kind of keep an open secret about, and we know that's bad, and it's not going to end well for that guy, but I can't help him. He's got to figure it out. And it's like, boy, does that really layer into the idea of this being a very insular story where you're in a remote thing. It's set up almost like the beginning of the Evil Dead 2013 or whatever it was, where, you know, like, oh, we're going to dry out in this cabin in the middle of nowhere. Like, well, yeah. You're going to try. Let's dry out dad's lycanthropy. A little trickier. But I think the very personal nature of that, dare I say, makes it a bit more of a somber rural thing.
No, it does. And it's a little bit like Benson Moorhead's one, the R one, Resolution.
Resolution, yeah.
You know, where, like, you know, that one works so well because it is just violently ripping away from, you know, all the societal stuff, and then being like, this is the bare bones of existing are the only way that this is going to work. But, oh, yeah, by the way, whoops, you know, wrong place, wrong time kind of situation. And it's like the, you know, so that one works really well in that respect. And, you know, I don't want to imply that, like, I don't think that this works that way. I just think that, like, just as you say, Matt, like, you know, we're kind of hiding from the outside world, and that certainly is true, for sure. But then also that could also very much beg into, like, we could have had a scene earlier on where where they're, like, over at the lake, you know, on the first, of course, you lose then the car wreck sequence, but, you know, like, you know, they're, like, hanging out at the lake, and then dad's sort of acting kind of weird, or there's, like, a separation, or you get a little bit of more of a other characters to talk to kind of a thing. And just other ways in which the thing kind of unfolds in and of itself, because the part that really felt undercooked, even, you know, accepting the scale as it is like the dynamic between him and wife lady. It was sort of like, you understand what's going on, but, like, there's a few too much of like a, but it's her career though, and my career is the thing, and that kind of nope along kind of stuff, where, like, I just saw Presence the other day, and, like, that one, they allude to some serious legal goings on with Lucy Liu's character, but they don't like spell it out necessarily, and, like, it's driving a wedge between the married couple, but it's like you only get drips and drabs because it doesn't fucking matter. Like, it doesn't, like, who gives a shit? But in this case, it was sort of more like a career lady priorities, not the archetypal wife that you would expect and mother that you would expect, and, like, all right, well, okay, so then tell me what the characters think about that, not the obvious this is a problem, because I know it's a problem. You've told me already. So, like that's the one area where I just kind of feel like there could be more to the people part of it, because really you don't have a lot of time before this just gets moving, like, in terms of, like, you know, once he's gonna start going, he's going, like, it's the countdown has begun, you know. So, like I said, these are all kind of quibbly things for a thing I still ultimately really liked. It's just sort of, you know, you can start to picture the ways that things can be done in this way or that way, or look this way or look that way, or that kind of stuff. And so, you know, given that Lee Whannell was able to broaden the spectrum a bit with, you know, with the Invisible Man one, where, you know, I thought there was a lot of clever ideas in that for sure. And so this one just felt like a little bit small in that respect. But, you know, maybe that was the point. You know, like, maybe that was the whole idea.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I think it's completely valid and it makes sense to have that impression of it. Like, I really liked having a like siege movie, very locked down, almost takes place in real time kind of thing. And I guess that was also thinking that the things that happened in the movie happened over several days, just based on the trailer had me thinking, you know, we'd be spending.
Yeah, I was like expecting a longer timeline.
Yeah. And instead it is just once you're strapped in, it just doesn't stop.
Just that night. Yeah. Very assault. Yeah. You're saying 13. Yeah.
It's interesting. Like I do, you know, I'm the first one to go like, this is that trope of the woman who needs to have, you know, choose her child over her career thing. But this one, I felt like it was more just about the family dynamic than the gender. I guess just thinking of like how sometimes one of the kids will be vibing with one of us in a different way. And just like this week, we are not big on dad and we're more big on mom. Right. And
well, getting your kids to the age where they're interested in dad at all takes time.
Yeah. Like, well, and then also like if Jess tells them to do something and they just don't until I tell them and then they do. And that's like a gut punch. And so she's experiencing that with like, dad is clearly your favorite and he gets to do all these fun and funny things. And I'm stuck being not like the grown up, because thankfully he's not a man child, right? But she is stuck being the breadwinner and she has to be gone all day. And that, I think that works for either gender, for dudes that are, you know, woke enough to feel feelings, that like that happens, right? So I don't know. I went into this like fairly vulnerable, I guess, because I had just found out a second ring family member had passed away unexpectedly. I was like, you know, we already have the tickets. We should go see it. And so I was already thinking about how, you know, you love somebody, they can just get taken from you. And so I think I was more open to just have a movie pommel me. And then this one did. So I don't know how like subjective my experience of it was or how much that had to do with it, but it definitely was in the back of my head.
Yeah,
that makes sense.
So it seemed deeper, like maybe deeper than it was. But, you know, that's in the immortal words of the Mighty Mighty Boston's. That was the impression that I get.
Two things I want to make sure we talk about before we move on. What do y'all think of the werewolf design?
It's having just watched the Del Toro one where they tried to update like Rick Baker trying to just update the classic design. And then watching this one, I was like, this looks even less wolfy. But it is a good way to do like a nod to that classic wolfman, like versus werewolf, you know?
Because I made the joke about the trolls from Willow, but like it does end up looking a bit more simian, but I think it's because people are. So,
yeah, good point.
We're like, fucking primates.
It's pretty hard to like not, if you're going to try to show a thing that looks vaguely human, it's going to look more ape-like than canine. Like, sorry, I guess that's just...
Well, I mean, Teen Wolf just straight up looked like a
Larry Bird
orangutan costume. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. I thought it was a little jarring to see what it was. But again, I think that's helped by the transformation is actually done again with perspective as opposed to like a really crazy special effects transformation scene, which again,
although
I think
there are gnarly claw popping out scenes.
Yeah, that's still good. And then the only other thing that I had to point out, because it happened and I thought this immediately and then I giggled and I told myself to shut up because I was in a movie theater. When dad is at the end and like they're hiding out in the deer stand and his daughter does the whole mind reading gag that they've proposed earlier on as like one of their little special bonds is, what am I thinking? Oh, you think I love my little girl? Yeah, I'm always thinking that. And so they're cornered in the deer stand and wolf dad is approaching and she does her mind reading trick that says he just wants us to end. And then mom's having trouble making herself shoot dad. And then dad kind of lunges to give her the startle that will make her shoot him. And she like shoots him in the chest and he falls out of the deer stand and they come down. And he's laying there breathing hard and, you know, dying. And I'm like, fuck's sake. I mean, you're sad. It's, you know, your dad, your husband, but like, no double tap for daddy. Like, we're going to let him, we're going to let his wet breath hose out here as he suffers to his death instead of finishing him off with a bit of mercy. Like, come on. Like, yes, yes, child, I've mortally wounded your father. Now let us watch the light drain from his eyes. Feast upon his essence.
I really like, though, that they did not turn them back into humans when they died.
Yes. Same. I was worried about that, and they did not, and I love it.
And man, Dad Wolfman had a pretty gnarly makeup job. Like,
yeah,
the missing lips and everything.
Yeah, it's wild.
That's good stuff.
Yep.
The design of the, I guess your question about the makeup, like, it wasn't any great shakes, but compared to the Del Toro one and the original, like, that makeup never quite works. And so just having him look like he had a bunch of boils and extra body hair and like jutting jaw, that was enough. I was fine with it.
Yeah.
Yeah, it evokes it enough to where it's sort of like, well, it's like that thing, you know. I love the old Wolfman, and I, you know, the Del Toro one we'll talk about in a minute. It's just a joy, for all his lunacy. But the Wolfman in and of itself, in a drawn format, you know, like somebody illustrates it or something, it's the same thing with comic books where it's sort of like, you know, on the page, superhero outfits look dope, and in real life, you got to work really hard not to look real stupid. Like, they, you know, God bless the Russos and Joss Whedon and these guys for figuring out ways to make this stuff work right. Because, I mean, you know, we are old enough to have remembered that Captain America movie from, like, the early 90s. And it's sort of like, he's just wearing a silly pajamas. And so, like, it's one of those things where they had to work very hard to figure out how to make superhero outfits not look completely stupid. And they still failed, you know. Thank you, Green Lantern. But it's sort of like, they still can't 100% nail it. And then some of the X-Men ones, they look a bit dumb. And so, like, the Wolfman on an illustrated page, like something like a Bernie Wrightson type of thing, is going to look amazing. And it's like, in real life, it's like, it makes it look like it got a big old head. And so it's sort of like, it's one of those tricky ones. It's kind of like, like, dogs, even as much as I love Dog Soldiers, like, there are a couple of shots, and God bless them, they were doing the best they could, and that movie rules. But, like, there are a couple of shots where you get a little bit of a higher light where you're sort of like, he looks like a silly head.
Yeah.
So, you know, it is one of those tricky kind of creatures that, like, it's just hard to get correct on film. And sort of like, so this was an interesting way to do that and to get it across that way. And also, God bless them, by the way, they just hit at it, but God bless them for not bringing in Big Chief Gnome about the wolf guy, you know, character. Like, they didn't do that. They hint around the very, very edges of that, and then they don't do that. Like, thank God for that. Because how painful would that have been to be like, here comes Mystery Know-It-All Shaman guy, and he's going to get killed in the third act, but boy, he helped the white people along the way, and it's like, oh, okay. And they didn't do any of that, so thank God.
You just start thinking of the movie Werewolf that had, with Richard Lynch, that Mystery Science Theater did one of their best episodes on. Yes. And the Yanaglanchi is driven out by the Hetate. Gucci. Yeah. If you haven't seen that episode, watch that episode. But for me, yeah, like, as I said, my experience was weirder than, like, surrealer than usual. But boy, did I just feel and see things that I hadn't seen or felt for a while in a horror movie. And it's, like, relieved that I can still have some of that yanked out of me.
Yeah.
So for me, like, this is a 9 out of 10. Like, it is not a perfect movie, but it's a damn good one. Yeah.
Yeah, I like this a lot. My, like, the quibbles I brought up about things that I was not as keen on, are like the couple of things I found that I was able to nitpick about, because having watched this and enjoyed it, it was just rolling around in my brain. Like, I was thinking about this a lot and kind of teasing at the edges of bits of it to kind of see what I really thought. And, that's always a good sign. So yeah, this is an 8 out of 10. 8 out of 10. Yeah, that works. That's sometimes that's a full sentence.
Yeah, I'm going to be the, I guess I'll be the low man on the totem pole, not from with any malice necessarily, because there's a lot that they do really, really well. And if you take the take it on its own merits, the movie they were making, that works really, really well. And there's some genuine loss and kind of sadness. It's you know, there's some good meat in there for sure. And there's definitely some things that work really well. And there's some creative ideas that, like the as he's starting to deteriorate, that's just, yeah, you know, like the fly is, I didn't even think about the fly. Like, that's a perfect example of kind of what that thing is. And like, so yeah, all that stuff works really well. I just can't help but wish there was, the scale was a little bit different. But you know, I think everybody did a really good job, and I think it was, you know, and you know, maybe, I don't know. I mean, the reception has been kind of meh, and so I don't really know, like, to what extent, you know, like, why the Invisible Man did a couple $100 million and this did 30, but it's sort of like, yeah, I don't really know really necessarily, but yeah, so I'm gonna be a little bit of a total player. I'm gonna say 7 out of 10. I mean, yeah, I know, I don't really know the ways of hunting necessarily, because I don't hunt, but whenever they call those things deer blinds, it always cracks me up. I'm like, yeah, deer, it had to be blind as shit not to see that those big old like house on a stilts, you know, like everything else looks like a tree, and then there's that, and like deer's, you know, like you just walk around like Ray Charles or something like that. I guess that would be the way that they didn't see the fucking thing out of 10.
And they never have blinds on them. They just have naked windows.
That's true. Yeah, there's no the window treatment. You go out of business trying to sell deer window treatments.
God, the sequel to, if you give a mouse a cookie, just keep getting weirder.
Finally, something you can take home and apply.
If you sell a deer a window treatment, it's going to want...
It's going to ask for a valance.
Yeah. Oh, that's beautiful. Okay, well, how can we top that? We'll be back in a bit. So next up, we have Werewolves Within, or Los Hombres Lobos Adentro. And this is one of those just set in a slightly off place kind of things, suburban Disturbia, something or other? Suburgatoria, I don't know. Something happened.
Terrarium one? Vivarium or something? Or?
No, they had just the one set in a small town where one of them is, there's a ghost, and look. Anyway, it's a slightly left of center movie where it's just kind of nobody talks like people, but it's not like a balls out comedy. It's just more of a weirdness that you soak in for a while. And it, like, there are some unseen wolf attacks at the beginning, and then we get everyone holed up in a hotel, and this turns into a game of werewolf rather than like actual hunting the werewolf, like the parlor game werewolf, where it's just a parlor mystery and somebody is guilty and everyone's a suspect and they're all locked in together.
Which is why this is technically based on the video game Werewolves Within, which is insane.
Like, so what? Like, some of this works and some of it doesn't, I would say, because some of these characters are good in small doses and some are good in larger doses and some are best in no dose at all. Like the Method couple, like the white trash couple, was fun for a little bit, and then it was like, I don't see why they have to be part of the movie. Like, they could just be murdered fairly early on. And I, you know, God love him, but Harvey Guillen's character was the worst for me, because that, like, super stereotypical heightened gay man character just grates after a while. It's like, no. He should say something conventional. Like, he should drop the act at least once. if he's going to insist on continuing to talk, because you are giving him no depth. He's just like, his whole character is gay.
Right.
Basically. And I guess rich.
That's kind of this one. A lot of that kind of those archetypes remind me a lot of, you know, as much as I did like it, but it reminded me a lot of Cooties, where it's sort of like everybody's real broad, and it's sort of like, and so you kind of have to go like, well, the option that we have is that it's broad. Like even the character, I love Sam Richardson's character in this. I think he's great. I really like his character a lot.
Annapolis is fun.
He's really like really enjoyable, and Cecily Milana Ventrum, that lady. Like both of their characters are like closest to the ground, and they have a little bit more depth to them. Or you know, he certainly does.
But fantastic chemistry.
Yeah, they really have.
They're very watchable.
Yeah, you could just watch them in like five different movies playing different characters. They're going to have a real good dynamic, and he's just great in general. And it's like, but everybody else, to your point, like I mean, everybody else is just broad as a fucking barn, and it's just a matter of being like, yeah, I'm just going to kind of tolerate and kind of go like in the gay couple when he's training for marathons or pentathlons or whatever the fuck he's training for and all this kind of stuff. But it's sort of like, you know. That's all fine and good. He's very kind of vain and sort of impatient. But it's like, give them one more dynamic, you know? Like, or like Michaela Watkins and the other guy. Like, Michaela Watkins is a brilliant comedic brain.
National treasure, yeah.
Yeah, she's amazing. And she's so good. And like, so just let her go down a couple of notches and give her one more thing about herself. Same thing as the husband guy, where it's sort of like, it's like, oh, America, blah, blah, blah. It's like, okay, fine. And then also, you know, he's a prolific whittler or something. I'm just doing one other thing.
I was like going to say something about woodworking.
Freaking is one more thing, and they don't have it.
The characterization is very like sitcom. You know,
yeah,
it's very like or even hour long network drama from the '90s where sexuality was a characteristic that was also a personality, like. It's just a little throwbacky, which again, for like a broad parlor game, because it's essentially like it's an improv scene, you know. So it's like, okay, I'm the authoritarian, I'm the liar, I'm the sex pot. It's all like, yeah, one word or two word descriptions to just be able to go, okay, I can run with that in broad strokes. And the movie is also set up to be relatively light, so it sort of works. I mean.
Well, and that's kind
of
why
some of them are a little more irksome, I think.
Well, that's kind of why why the third act in this, I kind of like, because like early on, so here's, because I saw this when it came out, you know, whatever festival it was, and I was like, it's fine and enjoyable. And you know how time will like whittle parts of it away where you'll forget certain things, and you're like, I really like that. I thought that was good. And then when you guys were like, yeah, it's kind of middling, I'm like, okay, I got to watch this again because whatever else. Then I watch it again, and I remember, like, yeah, the first third of it, I'm like, I'm just on board, I'm having fun. I love the dynamic with the leads. We're just clipping along. And then the middle part gets a little bit all over the place. And then the third act becomes so goddamn broad where you're like regular people become murderers. And you're like, what the fuck are you talking about? And it's like, and so it just became so broad and goofy and nutty. Like, it's just sort of like, okay, this is too much, like too much.
You have
come back down about three. Come back down to Tucker and Dale. Like that's where it needed to come back down.
Fucking broad, yeah.
Yeah, it's back broad. Beyond like, that. Yeah, and it's like, but you just have villain and then good guys. Like this one, like everybody becomes a villain. Everybody's a murderer.
One of my notes was just like I had to take note of someone being called the cockamamie wolf to really drive home the Kathy Bates comparison. Like, it's like, yeah, you're doing these large, broad versions of things we can maybe even recognize the outline of, which is just strange. But it's if I don't think about it too hard, it's pretty fun. And I like gives me a little like happy, warm feeling. And then like, but if you start to pick through it for the specifics, it's like, that bit kind of sucks. I didn't find that great. But that's also interspersed with things I enjoyed from, again, our two leads who, I just wanted more time with them. Because their whole little like flirty falling in love bit is really great and cute. Like it's super fun. And they're like this weird mixture of like excited and innocent. And it's all really delightful. So like as the movie kind of turns and becomes like, ah, murder, rampage, everything, that it sets it up to have that be sort of a wacky turn. But I wonder if it's that turn comes too early and they don't have enough to play it out for as much time as they give it.
Mm, yeah.
Maybe that would kind of solve that problem for me. And maybe other people like thought it was really boring until it got bonkers. I don't know. Mm. I guess I just would have liked more time with those people. But again, that's just me asking for a different movie. So, man.
I just needed less of some of the characters for sure. I think you could give them a little more depth, or you could blow them out even more and just make it like The Burbs or Nothing But Trouble or something super.
Burbs was the one I was thinking of. The Burbs and yeah. Krampus, those were the two that I was thinking of, where like you set them up to be broad and then you bring them back to sharpness. Where like in Krampus, you know, you have these broad archetype characters, but you do bring them back down. Like you go, and you can bring them back down to a sharper point. Burbs is kind of like the same way, where you're like there's some broadness, and then at a certain point, you know, the circumstances change, and then it can sharpen up a little bit. That's what I would have liked, yeah, with the Bethead couple or with Michaela Watkins' character or the gay couple. Like just you know, start them off broad as a barn. But then bring it back down to I'm really scared. Like I don't, you know, and this whatever else. What can we do to? Like it doesn't have to play to 11. Like you can just kind of bring it back down. But instead, the third act just goes woohoo. It's like
goes full like scary movie, you know, which they weren't doing. But I don't know. I had fun with the third act just because people were dying in entertaining ways. And there were people I didn't really care about. And so I think like that is the character development they were going to offer us is like, we're not going to offer more depth to these characters because who gives a fuck? They're going to get ripped through. And then I guess just I liked that ending a whole lot because it was like, yeah, I'm a werewolf, but if I go around and kill people, it's one at a time and eventually I'm going to get caught and everything sucks. So what I'm going to do is have you all kill each other. I'll mop up the survivors and then you all go on the deep freeze until I get hungry. It's like, that's fun.
That's a great plan. Like, yeah that's good. A really good plan. It's the reason why when you know, like migratory birds and predatory animals, there's a reason why they like, I hang out here for a while and we leave here. We go to this other place. Cause then the food comes back here and then we have the food and then we go back to the other place. And by the time we get back, it's food again. Like it's kind of like it's a pretty basic kind of thing, which is funny to have somebody that can speak, like articulate that point.
It's just pretty funny. I wonder if it's just the middle part needed a little more of showing us how deep these resentments went in this neighborhood. Because if you don't have to go like full Needful Things to say like all of these people are ready to kill each other at a moment's notice. But you can dig into all of those things. And then when they start killing each other, then that has a little more punch instead of just being, oh, that's a funny idea. You know, like it's fun to watch carried out, but it's not, you didn't earn it at all. Right.
That's the thing. Yeah. Just a little bit more meat on the bones. Like the Method couple, one of the two of them, the reason why they're there is that they inherited a home from a family member and they've really not been able to deal with the loss. And so they just kind of are like, you know, whatever, just some little thing there or like the thing with Michaela Watkins, any of these characters, just give them one more thing. And then it just all plays a little differently versus like, I just watched this again. And I was like, you give the third act and when she kills it with the corkscrew and stuff like that. I was like, what the hell? It's kind of like, yeah, why was that the choice you made?
Have that on the dance card, yeah.
Yeah, it's just kind of like that part of it. Because it's a bummer, because that sequence of like 15 minutes or thereabouts, that like you just have just a whole bunch of killing. And you go, this person kills this person, this person kills this person, yada, yada, yada. And then you have the oil guy and all the rest of it. And like you have to slog through all that stuff. And then you get the final act where you get the reveal of her as the werewolf. And that rules. So it's like, like, damn it. Oh, my God. Just that whole wacky bit in the middle part. Yeah, I think Josh, you said it right. It's like there's not enough earn there to like either commit to just completely over the top nonsense or the way that like a Burbs or like a Krampus does, where you can go silly and wacky, but then you really come back down to human stuff, and that works. They can work really, really good. And so it's like it kind of didn't do either one. They kind of split the difference, which kind of robs that last bit, which is so goddamn great, of, you know, some of what would make it work really, yeah, really well. But, you know, I mean, said it's, you know, God bless them for the effort. I mean, same thing with Cooties. Like, you know, like I like Cooties quite a bit, but it's like I have some of the same quibbles with that one as with this one, where you're just kind of like, if you could just de-broaden it a little bit, then like that works better.
Yeah, I feel like this is a movie that, like, mostly I enjoyed. It's becoming a victim of a thing that I'm increasingly just willing to ascribe to, like, movies have to be a certain length. And it would be cool if they didn't, because then they could just tell the story with as much story as there is. It's one of those things. I was talking to Carr about this a while back, is I would love to see, with things that are being produced for or going to streaming, seeing things no longer matter how long they are. The story is just being told in 45 minutes, if that's how long it is. And what do you care?
That's kind of what they did with Skeleton Crew. Like, all the episodes were different lengths.
Just whatever it takes. Yeah. And like, I think it'd be cool if that became more normal. I get that for theatrical stuff, it has to be a certain amount of time to kind of meet criteria for being released. Like, fine. But I don't know. I like the idea that a movie could be 45 minutes and it's a good 45 minutes and you're done. You know, obviously we've been exploring short films for some time.
Give me a Masters of Horror that is just taking some of these like 90-minute indie films and turning them into 55-minute masterpieces, right?
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, I mean that's a good point about Skeleton Crew. We're 3 episodes from the end, and I couldn't smile more if I tried. Like, it's
you're so damn good.
The art of it is so beautiful. The way it's done is so beautiful. It just fucking rules. But you're right that there are a couple episodes that are longer, a couple that are shorter, and that's actually kind of a relatively common thing other places in the world. Like, there's a lot of there's a lot of BBC and, you know, kind of Northern European stuff from the Scandinavian countries, that sometimes you'll have these series and one episode will be 47 minutes and one will be 1 hour and 10. And you're like, okay,
and this whole season is just those 2 episodes.
Right. Yeah.
And it's just sort of like
a couple of years, lads.
It can be done. Yeah. Like, this is the thing that can be done. And it's sort of like, so yeah, it does make you wonder if you can cut out some of the nonsense and really focus on the stuff that works. And it's like, it really does, clip, you know. So I don't know.
I mean, for me, this was like the definition of a 7. It's not bad, and it's not angry making, and it's not like gross or creepy in the bad ways of those things, but it's like, it was a fun little thing that went in one eye and out the other. And I think we hit on that it's just kind of hammock shaped, and like I borrow from Charlie that the middle goes a little slack, and then you have a great idea on either end of that middle. So yeah, I would say 7 out of 10. That guy who was the pretentious prick in Orange is the New Black and the pretentious prick in Severance, and apparently you look at him and go, yeah, fuck you, guy.
Good work if you can get it. Yeah, I'm like a 6.5 out of 10 on this one for me. Really, really liked kind of our buildup of everything getting sussed out. Like I said, I really liked our relationship between our leads. I kind of wish that had remained more of the focus instead of like, yeah, ill-defined beefs boiling over for the kind of our third act. Like, parts of that were still fun and all that. It just kind of doesn't quite fulfill the promise of what I maybe had built it up to be in my head based on the first act. So yeah, it's still a fun watch. If this is the kind of thing that you can just catch, you know, on whatever streaming platform, like, I think you'll have a good enough time with it. So
yeah, it's enjoyable, and it's creative, and yeah, so the broadness is just the part that, and some people's mileage may vary. I mean, there's sometimes people really dial in on the kind of the broader kind of scope things, and then that's, you know, people really enjoy that. And then certainly, you know, either 3 of us at any given point can absolutely be like, this is broad as a fucking bar, and I had a blast. So it's sort of like, yeah, it's just, it can kind of just be how something hits you, but it's just kind of a little bit underwhelming, just in the sense that you know, you've got these great leads and you've got this really cool idea for a story, and it you kind of just undercut yourself a little bit by prioritizing stuff that doesn't matter, and or is uninteresting, and sort of like, ah, darn. You know, so I mean, you know, all things being equal, like they got this thing made and it's got a lot of creative juice to it. So I'm kind of with Josh. I mean, this is kind of your kind of the epitome of like a 7, where it's just sort of like, you know, it was enjoyable. Like nothing made me mad about it. There's a lot that I enjoyed, a lot that I had fun with. And God bless them for making, you know, an actual honest to God monster movie that doesn't have the same 4 setups as every Redbox monster movie that has the same damn thing over and over and over again. So, you know, good on them for kind of changing up the vibe a bit more. So, you know, so like I said, 7 out of 10. Pardon me, 7 out of 10. Cyclotron as like a feature on like a bed and breakfast. Because when you first see her little workspace, you're just like, what is happening? Like, I mean, obviously she brought the equipment with her, but still, it's just like, it just presents so funny. There's something about that that really, I don't know why, it just really struck me as funny when you see her room and it's just like, okay. Like,
all right. She's in like a 1950s sci-fi movie.
Yeah, her intensity level. And it's supposed to be a red herring. I mean, obviously, like, there's the oil man's a red herring. She's a red herring. You know, there's a few different
communism
characters.
Was just a red herring.
All right, why is that? But like, and then so her behavior is like is done to be like, you know, is she the monster or whatever? But it was just like the way, yeah, she's absolutely the overly intense scientist in like a 50s style sci-fi movie where she's like, but you don't understand, I have to do the test. I'm like, okay. And so it's kind of one of those things, but cyclotrons are silly. They're always silly looking. Every time they pop up in a movie, it's just sort of like, it just, I don't know what it is. Maybe I just don't have enough appreciation for the science of it, but I always think they look so silly.
Yeah, they should use Jacob's ladders instead every time.
Oh, absolutely. It was some doofus with a theremin just off screen.
Yes. You know, I bought a theremin and I thought I would be super into it, but I never touched it.
You son of a bitch. I was just going to say
that. That was a real race to the bottom. Yeah.
There's a joke I saw recently about the deal. Like, so it's a used theremin for sale and, you know, never been touched. I'm like, all right. So dumb, beautiful. But it makes me laugh. Yeah.
So the Wolfman, El Hombre Lobo, this took place in 2010. Seems 20 years later to have a hefty soupçon of like Bram Stoker's Dracula envy,
yeah,
up in there. It is crazy to cast Anthony Hopkins and Benicio del Toro in the same movie because that gives you the entire continuum of articulation and speech.
Yes, sir.
And it's, you know, this is big and like big Gothic Victorian fun, and it is more kind of like, what if that 50s one was a little more clippy, and well, not 50s, earlier than that, but yeah, you know what I mean, 40s, like a yeah. lot, what if it was a little 30s? More quippy, a clippy, a little more gory, and you know, we update the effects some and go, and it's just it's big silly fun, I guess.
It like, definitely goes for seeing a certain level of grandiosity that's pretty fun. Like,
right, and then you have like Anthony Hopkins in the Anthony Hopkins role.
One of my notes, yeah. One of my notes is, if you only get to have one person appear behind you playing the piano unexpectedly, T-Hop is a strong choice. Yep. Which also, I decided Anthony Hopkins is T-Hop now.
Huh. Well, I guess if since I'm calling Benicio del Toro Ben of the Bull.
Yeah. I also pointed out that T-Hop looks like the dad werewolf from Teen Wolf, but mm-hmm. That's just me.
Well, I mean, casting Del Toro as a werewolf is kind of cheating. It's like casting Jack Nicholson as a werewolf or like Timothy Spall as the guy who turns into a rat, where it's just like half of your work is already done.
Yeah.
Before you put anything on him. And then you just kind of, you know, stick a shiny rubber nose on him and like, they went with the like realistic looking wolfman, like the wolfman syndrome that actually exists.
Right.
But with the like just cartoon dog nose, and it's so funny.
I love it. Well, like at the scale of this, the thing that this movie, like I think I told you guys this before. I mean, I watch this movie like every. I want to say every year. That's an exaggeration, but I watch this like every year, year and a half ish or so, because it just it's so much fun, and it's like it doesn't. There's no reason why they put $150 million goddamn dollars into making this thing, and you see the money. I mean, it's like the scale of it is unbelievable for this type of a thing. Like you've got this, it's heavy gore and gross bits and this really like gnarly stuff, and a lot of it. And you're like, what on earth were they thinking, spending $150 million on a thing that's gonna gross out?
That's gonna get an R.
Yeah,
for
casual blood. Audience is not gonna be into
this. Yeah, like so everybody's moms are gonna be like, blah, and like this is not like. So what the fuck were you thinking? And it's sort of like so that just for starters.
It took this to prime the pump for the public to be ready for sparkly vampires. Is all I'm saying. Yeah,
it's just like, but like so that's the first thing, and then the second thing you get the cast, of course. If Hugo Weaving pops up in there, and you've got
he does,
and then you saw, and then the forest hunting sequence. I love Rick Baker does a little turn in the camera like. That made me happy. Every time he pops up, I was like, Baker! Crystal thought I was nuts. And I was just like, what's wrong with you? Like, oh, he's the captain in the effects. He won the Academy Award.
Crystal was not wrong. It's just for a different reason.
Yeah, I think it's misdirected. But and it's like, so the scale of it is the first thing. And then you've got this cast. And then what I've really loved about watching this many times over the years is that when you get to the end of this, I always have the same revelation as if I had the same thought organically, which is this is all the Universal Monster movies as like one movie.
Yeah, essentially, right.
It's all of them, and it's in one, because it has some Dracula in it, has some creature in it, has some Frankenstein in it, has some Phantom Opera, has some Jekyll and Hyde, and has some Wolfman. It has all of them in there, and it's just all one story, and it's just like and go.
A Van Helsing way where it feels like there are four movies being made with the budget for half of one.
Yeah, that Van Helsing is the way you do this bad, because it just it makes your eyes hurt. This one, it's a shoving popcorn in your face, like hooting good time, because it's just like you're just off to the races. Like, every part of it, you're like, and then here's coming the next crazy thing, and it's just like just go. And the way that they shoot, like the thing in the little medical theater, where like. They suddenly fisheye it a little bit, and then you do this little zoom in on the one guy who's realizing that he's transforming, and then it just becomes just like just ripping this guy apart, throwing this guy through the thing, and roars and all the stuff, and it's just sort of like, and then it's off, and then they're chasing him, and there's a race through the streets, and for fuck's sake.
Yeah, the movie is definitely like when like the lights dim in the theater, the movie just whispers in your ear, like, you can just lay there, I'll do all the work. Like, and it's just gonna go, oh, you need something more to keep you going? How about this? You know, and it's like, have some wolf on wolf violence. Like, let's do this. The movie, I guess the inevitable part that you compare to, like, you got to mention Coppola's Dracula, is that this movie gives you some of that look, but I guess ended up going, this is somehow simultaneously oversaturated and washed out. Because when you have, say, like Benicio in the foreground, he looks like the light is playing off him perfectly, and it's like this beautiful shot. But then all the background and everything around him is just like dim and gray and bluish. And you're like, what the fuck? Like, this would have been made in the era where they could have been very much just choosing how to saturate the colors separately in one third of the screen versus the rest. Mm. But it seems like whatever they want you to be looking at is turned up to 11. And then they take everything down to like a 3. That's not the main focus.
It's that
without making it out of focus.
It's that Scorsese thing in Shutter Island where you're like, I must be losing my fucking eyesight, because if I'm not looking at the one thing, then everything's blurry and I'm getting a headache, and like, how are you doing this? Stop. It's like, and this has that to some degree, but it can't linger on a scene too long. We can't have that. We got to keep going.
Yeah, had three suicides at 7-Eleven and is like desperately looking for a bathroom after the burrito, and is just going to drag you with it. And it's a hoot. Like, for all that, like, you know, as much as these sound like digs, and in a way some of them are, but this, I do think I was helped immensely, Charlie, by you kind of priming us with, it's bonkers, but it's fun. And it really is, because you do get permission, or at least I felt like I had it from the start to go, don't worry about it. Whatever it is that's making go, but just don't worry about it. Just really enjoy this craziness. And it is super fun to watch. And I think we've watched dumber movies that were fun to watch. And this is not necessarily dumb. It's just perhaps ill-advised.
Well, that's what I love about it too. Cause like, man, I'll forever be a big defender of Hansel and Gretel Witch Hunters. Like I will always defend that movie, but that one plays more comedically and has some things that are kind of not necessarily played for laughs, but like it's more geared towards a little bit of a maudlin kind of humor at parts, and there's some, you know, stuff in there with that, and I fucking
it's
love
more that wry, I think.
Yeah, and it's got a drier kind of sense of humor. There's a little bit more of that in there, but then like, but Josh, you bring up Van Helsing, like it's a perfect goddamn example. As the same as the Dracula, was it Dracula Unborn, Unfolded,
Untold,
Shaven, Untold? I think.
Yeah, like so, Dracula Untold and Van Helsing are like the bad way you do this Wolfman movie. Where like those ones just become tiresome and just dull and uninteresting. Whereas like with this one, like all the costumes and the sets, the gypsy encampment thing and that whole sequence and how that one's done, stuff through the forest, the running through the city, all those things, they play, there's an excitement to it. There's like a pop to it. Whereas like those other ones, they just couldn't figure it out for the life of them how to make it fun and exciting. You know, it's like Van Helsing, they got witches flying around and things and stuff, shit flying everywhere. And you're just like, ah, okay. And it's so it's like there is an art to it, I think, to making something, you know, fun. But I'd go back down to the scale of the thing, like, you know, the budget and the scale of it. I don't know what they thought was going to happen, but it's just like, you know, the Deadpool was quite a few years from happening, and where you could really make some serious dough. But even Deadpool, I think Deadpool's budget was like 85, I think. And so
yeah,
sort of like
they were still pretty reasonable.
And so they made Deadpool for 85, and they just, you know, blew the roof off the thing. So you can do this kind of subversive, over-the-top, R-rated kind of stuff. This was well before its time with a scale and an expectation that was going to set the world on fire. But I think more than anything else, it probably just confused most people, because it's kind of like, whoa, I don't understand.
Well, for someone that's either a non-horror fan or a casual one where, you know, you want to see one around Halloween every year or whatever, like, one of the reasons to make a movie called Wolfman is because that gives people something to cling to. There's familiarity there. Like, okay, I don't watch horror. I don't understand what's going on with Nightmare on Elm Street or Terrifier, but like Wolfman, okay, that's a classic. Guy turns into wolf. And it's like, you'd think you'd walk into that going, I can handle this. I'll understand it at least because it's an archetype. And then you get crazy gore that's going to make people upset and weird ass people doing, you know, like earnest but weird takes on characters. And it's one of those where you go, well, it's like, you know, John Carter from Mars. You're like, they couldn't have possibly thought once they got shooting that this was going to work out. Like,
yeah,
there's no way you just fix this by spending more money.
Yeah, and that's the thing that I marvel at. I'm just like, it's like that Robert Patrick one, that ocean thriller actiony one that I love very much, that I can't think of the name, I'm embarrassing myself.
Deep
here,
but like,
yes, that's the one. Like, Deep Rising fucking rules. And it's like, what did they expect was going to happen? Like, I always say, I remember when I made you guys watch it, but it's like you watch it, you're like, how, like, they could have made the amusement park ride, like, through the halls on the jet skis and stuff, and, like, all those great things. And it's like, nah, man, like, it's too beautiful for this world. You can't, like, it's not going to work. And it's just, and so there's just those type of movies that just exist, and you get to go back and revisit them. And, like, for me, like, this one is just one of those ones that's just through the roof for enjoyment level. And I just have so much fun every time I watch this. And God bless these fools for trying to make this silly thing.
I think for me, like, I've really enjoyed watching it, but I wish that it had been a little more, had some kind of a gimmick to it, I guess. Like, I don't know what it is that I'm thinking of, like, push it a little harder, you know, like in how Bram Stoker's Dracula had just the effects that you could have accomplished back in the early 1900s, right? Like, everything in camera. And that was neat, and it kind of gave it more of a point of view. And, like, this has the cast on all cylinders and the costumes on all cylinders. And, you know, if it had just another little point of view, something that it wanted to do differently and say differently, I think that it would really just go out of the park. And as it is, I think it's like a solid double, right? Mm-hmm. Like, it's fun, but I wish it was weirder, I guess. It's a little too similar to the original. I don't know. I just have thoughts sometimes.
Yeah.
But
it's a tough one to put in a box.
And the one thing that nobody can deny is that if the gentleman who directed this is, if you look at his filmography, it's just Honey, I Shrunk the Kids, Rocketeer, Jumanji, third Jurassic Park movie, Hidalgo, Captain America. Oh my God, dude! Like, it's what a resume! Like,
that is wild.
What an incredible resume for, you know, to then turn out this $150 million blood-filled, like, you know, epic. It's just I don't know. It's a trip and a half.
He is good at the like burnished looking back at the past and nostalgia, but kind of forward looking. And, you know, like the Rocketeer was just like an Art Nouveau painting come to life.
Yeah,
it's gorgeous.
Like
the
pulp serial, like so overlooked and underrated. And Captain America, like that's one of my favorite Marvel movies, and it's not most people's.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I like this guy and what he does, with the, you know, like with the exception of the Nutcracker and the Four Realms. That was
a
weird thing. But you know, he directed the Pagemaster, and that's got to get you something. Yeah. So fair. Joe Johnston, whom I continually confuse with Joe Dante, they are incredibly different dudes.
My name is Jan Janssen. I come from Wisconsin.
Something like that. My name is Ron Swanson, and I don't want to play this game.
Well played, sir.
Very funny.
So, yeah. For me, I had this at the same level as Werewolves Within. I had it a 7 out of 10, I think, but... in an entirely different, you know, genre. Like, those two movies could not be less similar. I just think they're about the same level of like, yeah, man, that was a blast. Okay.
Word.
So, yeah, 7 out of 10 for me.
Yeah, pretty similar for me as well. And, yeah, again, it's just like, you know, saying something is like a really good apple and saying something's a really good chocolate bar. Like, they you couldn't really compare them directly, but you can tell that they both means they're okay. So, yeah, this is... it's a weird, odd little beast, but I also think I will probably be watching this again at some point because it is just kind of fun. So it's 6, I'll say. 6 out of 10 seems safe. What else? Yeah, 6 out of 10's good use of the word prurient, Hugo.
when he shows up with his big old face, you're like, uh-oh.
Where did you go? And you're just going to say words to camera?
Yeah, just like looking right down the barrel. Yeah, you know?
Thing.
Like, oh, God. Yeah, so I mean, you know, to surprise no one, I'll be the high man on the totem pole here. Like, there's definitely one of those things, like, before you get old and you start, especially if you're big into art and culture and film and stuff, you start learning how things are made and how things are produced and whatever, and it kind of takes some level of magic, although there's some things you were really lovely to learn too about how things are made. But you know, when you're younger and you don't really understand those things, whatever, I just think of like the small town kid who likes the Universal monster movies and all the crazy sci-fi shit from the 50s and, you know, the castle things and Peter Cushing and Christopher Lee and all those types of things, and they're like able to get in a theater because the people don't care about checking IDs, and they go sliding in 2010 and get just greeted with this onslaught of this film. I just sort of like, it just feels very like affectionate in that way, of being like, oh, you like weird stuff, like happy birthday. And so but it's also arty too, like the sets and the costuming and stuff. There's a lot of good art that goes into it too. And then plus, Baker won the Academy Award that year for visual effects. I mean, it's like, it's something kind of neat about that part of it too. So yeah, I just that's how I think of this one. Like I said, that's the reason why I always will go back to this, like, and watch this, you know, a pretty decent clip, because I find it so much fun. So I'm gonna say 8.5, a ridiculous 8.5 out of 10. 8.5 out of 10. You know, Emily, you ain't gonna change a man. You can try, but you ain't gonna change that, man. Out of 10.
Emily, can I be blunt?
You cannot.
You're not gonna change that, man. Sure.
Yep.
We'll take a quick break and then we'll talk about what we're gonna watch next time. So next time we are going to be watching some new stuff. We've got What You Wish For, that is on Disney Plus or Hulu, whichever one you've got. And then we are looking at Grafted on Shudder, kind of body horror-y kind of thing. And then Getaway, which is more of a thrillery thing with Nick Frost. Nick Frost ended up, even though he can't say that he remembers Ad Adden.
God, this is so fucking perfect in every way. It's just this grizzled pirate character as a robot is just so good. And then also Getaway.
Yeah.
What Josh and Matt, I said this too, but Getaway also has my would-be girlfriend, Aisling Bay, the Irish comedian, who, if you ever just want to make your life just ever so slightly better, look up little clips from her from the Apollo from Britain or some of the things. She's appeared on every show in Britain tons of times. She's super witty, super quick, very clever, very, very funny, and she's fantastic in general. So, yeah, just love her. So, it's like, between her and Nick Frost, like, the rest of the thing could have been about watching paint dry and get her shit. Still would have gone to see it. So, you know, she's awesome.
Yes, it is get away from that paint because it is wet.
Yes.
Now we watch it dry.
Get it on your sleeves and then you'll look at
that. Oh, terrible fright. So we're watching What You Wish For, Grafted, and Get Away. And I've been Josh this entire time and I say good night.
And once again, you'll be able to go to our website at horrorshowhotdog.com to see next week's short, which will be Pumpkin Guts. I will warn my erstwhile co-hosts, as they often don't watch the short until right before. This one is 13 minutes long, so leave yourself a little extra time. I try to avoid the long ones, but I like this. So
Pumpkin Guts. That title sounds
college
familiar,
nickname,
too.
Yeah.
We might have watched this as part of a festival.
Yeah, I thought maybe we crossed paths with this before. It sounds familiar, but I'll be excited to watch it and allow for time to be able to finish it.
There you go. So yeah, you can check that out on our website, or where did I find this one? This might have been on Vimeo. You know what? Venmo me cash and I'll tell you where it is. And you can do that by sending your cash to, as far as you know, Matt, this entire time.
Step 3. Step 3, very profit. Little profit. This is Charlie Don Austin. Take care of yourselves. Take care of each other. And we'll be talking towards you before you know it. All right, be good. We'll see you later. Bye-bye now.